Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Malolele everyone, my name's Jenny Salesa and I'm the local Member of Parliament for Manukau East and Labour's Associate Spokesperson on Health. Welcome to this edition of Red Alert. Today I'm going to be talking Pacific health and wellbeing, and my special guest today is Honourable Voi Margoshi, who was a Member of Parliament from 1996 to 2008. He was also the former MP for Maunga Kiakea and former Cabinet Minister in the last Labour government under Helen Clark. At various times, he was the Cabinet Minister responsible for housing, corrections, transport and Pacific Island affairs. Voi is now the CEO of Whakatautua, which is a charitable organisation providing disability, mental health and older people's public health and other support services for Pacific people within New Zealand. Welcome, Voi.
Malolele, and welcome to you and your listeners.
Thank you for being with us this morning. I understand Whakatautua is celebrating its 10th birthday this year. Congratulations. Can I have you please describe what it is that Whakatautua does?
Well, we started out as two charitable trusts. One was specialising in disability and programs for the elderly, and that was called the Pious Trust, and the other one was a Malolonga Trust, which worked at a community mental health service level. And over the years, they struggled, and they came together 10 years ago to create Whakatautua as the support for their two trusts. And it's evolved now into being quite a large organisation that operates West Auckland, South Auckland, Porirua and Christchurch offices. And we have built on that beginnings of mental health, disability and older people to now do work through Whanaora, supporting our families with disability using a financial capability model, and more recently through MSD contracts, we're working in the area of family violence and at-risk families, and in the last couple of months partnered with Emerge Aotearoa, a large provider of mental health and community services. So we're now supporting families in emergency housing and in the community where they're at risk of losing their tenancy with Housing New Zealand, and that's called sustaining tenancies. So along the way, we've grown from what were disability mental health services into other services, and we also delved into one-off projects, so for suicide prevention, for instance. We worked with a large Tongan organisation called the Toko Collaboration. We've built programs for youth, with a group called Legacy, and we're also at the moment involved in training our Samoan Matua so that they can help their families in the suicide prevention space. So we're always up for new and different things, but we rest upon those beginnings of mental health, disability and older people's day programs. And they can be used in innovative ways. Our older people, for instance, at the moment, and you've been to see our older people's programs, we were asked to spread the message about rheumatic fever. Mm-hmm. And who best to do that than our elders? So all of our older people's groups, if you like our Facebook page, you'll see them performing a song that they've written, putting out the message about taking your children to the doctor if they have a sore throat. And so new and innovative ways of working, but based on our core expertise in the mental health and disability space.
So let me ask you a little bit more about the older people's groups, because you convene quite a number of them, and I understand you convene them regularly on a regular basis, and then once a year you bring all of them together. What do you see as some of the advantages of bringing the older people together?
Well, a lot of our old people stuck at home on their own. Social isolation is a big issue for them. They don't have the ability to get out and about. They miss the company of their fellow elders, and they particularly miss the opportunity to celebrate their culture and their language and their music. So each week in the county's Manukau area, we have about 8 or 9 groups, and we have one in West Auckland for Te Valuan. Mm-hmm. And they come along for the day. They engage in cultural activities. We pay for and they do craft work. they receive a healthy meal, they do some exercise, and they also will have people coming and talking to them about how to keep well and, you know, the sort of things that they need to know about things that might be afflicting them at the time. So it serves a multiple purpose. Our West Auckland group, we did health checks for them, and we found 80% of them had severe and chronic illness that had gone undiagnosed and untreated. Many of them had high blood pressure, diabetes, and we were able to then hook them up to the right services through the funnel, a health provider. And so we were able to pick up their health, get those undiagnosed, untreated things dealt with. And that's the advantage of bringing them together weekly as a group, is that you can get them to access the proper health services. But keeping good company, being able to converse in your language, having a break from the family home where they might be stuck for, you know, the other 6 days of the week, a highly important aspect of good mental health and well-being is just having company. And that's what we do with those groups. And they love it. They come to them. They miss each other when they have their holiday break over Christmas. And all sorts of relationships are built. Quite often we'll find, for instance, an elderly couple, one may die, and then they meet another partner at our old people's group. So you never know what's going to happen at these sorts of things, but they are amazingly important parts of what we can do. And we hope that the Health of Older People strategy, that the governments keep on putting together strategies, will turn into more of these programs, because they don't operate very many other places in New Zealand.
I've always enjoyed visiting
the
groups.
Yeah.
You know, the Cook Island group, one of the Cook Island groups, they meet in Ōtara regularly. And what I've noticed whenever I go visit is they bring their ukuleles. They, you know, they sing. Mm. Some of them dance and exercise, and some of them actually do crafts. But they absolutely enjoy each other's company, and they tell me that it's, you know, the highlight of the week for them.
Absolutely.
Coming to these groups.
And when you think about those messages that they can carry into the family around suicide prevention, around rheumatic fever, these are important elements of being able to engage with older people when they come together. Because so often they go to church to go to church, and they come to our groups to open themselves to all sorts of other things. And I looked at that Cook Island song that they wrote about rheumatic fever on Facebook, and nearly 10,000 people have viewed that message.
Wow.
Because they see their grandparents there singing and dancing, but they also get the message across about rheumatic fever and keeping our children well. So powerful communication tool is to never forget that our elderly people are very influential in their wider families and communities.
So tell me more about, you mentioned earlier on that one of the things you do now is you assist some of the people that you serve into emergency housing. How does that happen? How do you find out whether someone actually needs emergency housing, and then what do you do?
Well, we're now working with the existing emergency housing providers, and of course there are new big developments being built at the moment. There's a large one in Manurewa, which Emerge Aotearoa runs. They asked us to supply our expertise around working with Pacifica people, and in particular financial capability. So every family that will go through that that facility, as they are worked with by a team, we'll have one of our staff who's expert in financial capability. In the Manurewa case, he's a Cook Island young man. Very, very good. They'll all go through a financial capability program that will prepare them for when they go back out into the housing market in Auckland, which, as you know, is under great stress. These families are in emergency housing because they haven't been able to sustain a tenancy in the private sector or in Housing New Zealand. And they've got to be better prepared to survive when they go back out again. We've been working with Monte Cecilia, with the people in their emergency housing placements, and again doing a financial capability program that goes very deep into the other issues that are impacting those families, because it's the poverty and the lack of income drives all sorts of things, as you know. Can be underachievement of their children in education, can be poor health, there can be depression, and it can lead to family violence. So when you work with these families in emergency housing, you can better prepare them for what lies ahead. And what lies ahead is huge rents, shortages of housing, overcrowding. And you've got to give people the tools not just house them for a little while in an emergency housing situation or in a motel. You've got to give them the tools to make sure they don't end up back in those circumstances. And that's the work that we do and have been doing now with probably our disability community, but we're now taking it into emergency housing and at-risk families.
Can I ask you, please, in terms of the work that you've been doing with your disability folks, in terms of financial literacy, one of the things I really enjoy is coming to attend some of the graduation, you know, from these families that do the financial literacy programs with Whakatautua. Can you just describe a little bit more of what you do in that area?
I mean, it sounds fairly basic. What you have to do is work with the family. Too often the budgeting services only get a very short space of time to work with an individual within the family, and that person can't change the behaviour of everybody. So we bring the whole family together for an eight-week program. They will learn basic tools like having a spending diary. So you record everything that comes in and you record everything that goes out. You have a calculator, which we buy from the $2 shop, and a little notebook. Not high-tech stuff. The family then work out their needs and wants, and they have those discussions. What is it they really need to spend their money on versus what is it that they would want to spend their money on, the things that are not absolutely necessary to survival. And as they work through the program, we deal with their understanding of debt, how to get out of debt, how to not get into debt, how the system works when you're dealing with companies that are trying to sell you something at the doorstep, those trucks, those hire purchase agreements, all of the easy credit you can get out there that's easy to get and hard to repay. So what you would expect in a financial literacy program. But on top of that, we give them their legal understanding of their legal rights. So if they're disability families, it'll be around disability, it'll be around how to look after their family interests if there's a power of attorney needed. If it's in family violence, what protection do women get under the law? If it's in tenancy, what are your rights and responsibilities as a tenant? So you can tailor make it to the problems those families are confronting. When you start working with those families, they start looking at eating healthy is cheaper than eating takeaways. And we quite often, you all have heard a story of families might spend $200 a week on takeaways. Mm-hmm. And we see those families change from eating unhealthily to growing gardens to eating healthily. We give them the recipes from the Heart Foundation and they cook it. And they see we can still have our Pacifica food, but it's healthier and it's cheaper. We move into helping them to look at how they can increase income. And quite often we've seen families start their own little businesses or get better jobs and qualifications, pay down their debt. We don't get judgmental. We accept that people will go to church, that they will do falavelavis. And how do you plan that? You have your little emergency fund for those occasions when the family says we need to contribute to the funeral or the 21st, etc. And we've seen amazing turnaround in families who are still very low income, but are dealing with what money they do have in a managed way. We see children involved who say, "Mum and Dad, don't give me the $5 to take to school today to buy something from the dairy. I'll take a proper lunch and we'll save money as a result." And so you see people giving up smoking, eating healthily, looking at increasing their income. The whole dynamic of the family changed, because how often do families sit around the table and discuss anything? Let alone their financial well-being and their overall well-being. And we've been doing this for more than 2 years now. We've got case studies that show dramatic change in behaviour, and out of that change in behaviour, you get really good health and outcomes. You get better educational outcomes from the children. You see families now that are really totally different to the day when we first engaged them. And we now have churches coming and asking us, "Can you run the program?" We've got other organisations coming and saying, "Can you run the program?" Because we've shown the worth of it. And it's applicable in the disability space, in the family violence space, and the people who are struggling to house themselves. And so many other families out there need it. And we're hoping at the moment that we'll be able to keep growing those services. We get the main source of our funding from Whanaora, and it's an innovation project. It's a bit different to the rest of Whanaora. But I see it through all my life's work as one of the most exciting things I've ever been involved in. And we have a great core of staff who are all Pacifica, who speak their language and can relate to the families themselves that they work with because they've lived that experience themselves.
I remember attending one of the graduation from the financial literacy initiative that Waikato-Tua ran, and hearing a mother talk about the effect that it has had on the whole family and how the young children now no longer ask for takeaways, whether it be fish and chips or McDonald's, because they all understand, having sat through the whole course, just how important it is to save money. I also heard in a different graduation process someone say that they have given up smoking because they've figured out just how much it adds up.
It's
that
very
they're spending.
Yeah, very right. If you're sitting there around the table with your whole family and the spending diary shows you're spending X per week, and they get the calculator out and say, Mum, that's $6,000 a year on cigarettes. How do you face your kids who are saying, we might need this for our school, we might need that for our education? And so parents rightfully say, I'm going to give up. And they go and get the nicotine patches and they give up smoking. And you see families that, as I said, you know, the $200 a week on takeaways, they'll still have their takeaways once a week instead of four times a week. So they're still able to budget for their treat, and so should people. Life has got to be about having fun as well. But managed it. And so we've seen families then save up enough money to go on trips, to have the family reunions, to start saving for a house, even though in Auckland that seems an almost impossible dream. You've got to have dreams, you've got to have hopes, and you've got to learn how to achieve them. And that's what it's about. It's not somebody doing it for you, it's you doing it for yourself. And that's simply giving the people the tools. And I think we could change an enormous amount in our health and education system if more people were financially capable, because most New Zealanders aren't, and most Pacifica people sit at the bottom of knowledge on that. And an investment in that space by governments will get enormous return on investment, because you see totally different outcomes from families who are at the bottom of the heap, who are really struggling. And it's wonderful to watch it when you see the people come through that, and the camaraderie that comes from it as well. With our mental health services, for instance, we're charged by the DHB to help our people give up smoking. And for years we've been trying all the smoking cessation programs under the sun. There's nicotine patches, there's all these things freely available. But the problem with our service users in the mental health system is that the cigarettes help to counteract the drugs that they might be on for their mental health condition. And so they got a double whammy. When we started to introduce this financial capability program to them, we're now seeing outstanding results where we could never achieve them before. So our mental health staff have all been through the program together with the people that they work with. And we're really pleased initially with the results we're getting from that. And I think what it says is that you can't keep doing the same old, same old. And generally speaking, across disability and mental health and other health programs, you look at all the government plans and strategies, who are their targets? Māori, Pacific, and youth.
That's right.
Who are the youth? They're Māori and Pacific. So if we don't keep changing the things we're doing in health and social services away from the same old, we're going to keep on getting those results and we're not going to make the difference. So the invitation there is for governments to say, let's try some new stuff. And the new stuff that we've been able to try really is proving its worth. And I get very sceptical and very tired of the strategies and plans. And then I see the people who are charged with implementing them. They just go to the same providers. They go to the same people. They try the same programs. And guess what? The results are still the same.
That's right.
Māori and Pacific are still sitting at the bottom of the statistics as the most in need groups. And, you know, my challenge to all of the political parties, and, you know, obviously I've got my Labour background, but all the political parties have to say, time for change. Let's not keep repeating the same old. Let's try some new stuff. And that is not an easy thing to do. I've been, as you said, in politics. I've been a cabinet minister. I'm now working at a community level. And sometimes I just tear my hair out at how hard it is to get the bureaucrats to understand that new and innovative ways must be tried if we're going to get the results they're seeking.
Well done on all the good results that Whakatautua has done, especially in this area. Mm. I know that you've actually won quite a few awards because it is something that has been shown to work. I also know that there are lots of churches out there reaching out to you. I was one of those people that came and attended, I think it was your first program where you worked with a Tongan church where all of the young people in the church were enrolled in the financial literacy program, and to see the parents as well as the church leaders be really involved in this program, you know, it's really, really something to see.
Yeah, I think what's happened is that all government agencies, departments, city councils, or whenever they want to do something with Pacific communities, they load it onto churches and say, oh, you can do this for us. There's never any money, there's never any resources. They'd expect the churches to do it for them. And so we've been reluctant to go to the churches and say, we'd like to do this. And interestingly, when we started our programs, we didn't do it in the churches. We did it in the community settings. And when the church members and the leaders of the church heard about it, then they started coming to us. So we know your program works. Please come and do it with us. And that's the difference, is find the right programs, do the right things, and then the people will come and ask you to do it. And you'll also recall the parenting programs that we're doing. And mental health, and youth mental health in particular, is a massive problem in this country. The suicide rate is worse than most other countries in the world. It's more than our road toll. We have more people committing suicide than we do killed on our roads. Mm-hmm. And yet, programs are not sustained. We had a wonderful program, and then the funding stops. We get another one, and the funding stops. Has the problem gone away? No.
It's gotten worse.
And so parenting programs, where you start right at the beginning in those early years, so that parents are prepared to parent in a way that is going to prevent their children ending up in the mental health system and potentially on the suicide statistics. We've got a great program that we've just designed and run for Samoan and Tongan families. We now have to go and find somebody to fund it to continue, and that's the problem that we have in New Zealand today. Too many one-off pilot programs, too many things that are done and proven to work and then left to languish on the shelf. And we've got to have a better approach in public policy to make sure that well-proven, well-designed and well-delivered programs are rewarded. And let's get rid of some of the stuff that doesn't work and transfer that funding to something that does. And that's where, you know, community partnerships and having a close relationship with organisations like ours is hugely important for government and government agencies.
So one of the policies that Labor has already introduced is a youth mental health program where we will have a health professional at each school, regardless of the decile. What are your thoughts on that? And in your experience, has this been done in the past, and is it an improvement on what has happened?
Absolutely, and I applaud that policy, and I look to the history of where it comes from, and it's from our area where you represent, and I used to represent, in those core South Auckland schools, which have always been labelled as the AIM High schools, where they had full services within the colleges, where they would have a nurse, where they would have a social worker, they would have visiting services that would come in. And I recall now, off the top of my head, when that was introduced, there was a significant sexual health problem with the young people. Mm-hmm. And when you introduce those resources, those figures drop back dramatically. Mm-hmm. So there's proven evidence that if you do these things at a level where the young people will engage, where they're quite often frightened to go to their family GP because mum and dad goes there.
That's right.
Talking to the nurse and the social worker at school is something they feel much more comfortable with. So if we think of what is called One Tree Hill College now, once upon a time Penrose High School, in my old electorate of Mangakiakia, they were the first that I'm aware of. Then the AIM High School started up with the nurses and the social workers. And then eventually Labor saw that that should be spread as a model to, I think, all decile 1 and 2 schools. And our young people are under pressures and stresses that you and I never had when we grew up. And this is the sort of service that needs to be implemented. It's well proven. It's not expensive. And it's something that's very accessible for our kids. If we don't do this sort of thing, we will continue to get the adverse results that we all are aware of. So I think it's a well-designed, well-thought-through, but more importantly, evidence-based program. And go and look at those schools now and talk to the staff that have been there doing that work for years, and they'll tell you the success rates they have with those young people. And, you know, roll it out. Is what I say.
Yeah. Yep, we're definitely rolling it out. Absolutely. So another new policy that Andrew Little has announced is our primary mental health team policy. What are your thoughts on that, and how do you see your service, Wakatautua, being involved in something like that?
Well, I think it's great because there's a small model of that happened in Tamaki. Mm-hmm. It's rolling out a little bit further across some of the Auckland GP practices, and it's called Awhi Ora. And essentially, most people have to go and get a diagnosis from the mental health teams within the DHB before they can access community support services. And this is about trying to capture that before you go through that process. So a GP should be able to refer to a service like ours, where we've got community support workers, peer support workers, who can deal with those issues at a community level with a family. And so taking the fear out of it, making it much more accessible, working at that primary healthcare level between your GP, the nurses and the staff within the GP practices are more likely to be the ones that will really get to know what's happening with a family or a person, and then connecting them to community-based services, NGO services like ours, and there are many of them across Auckland and the rest of the country. It's a great policy. It will work. It's what's needed. It's a matter of putting it together. And I don't even think it's that expensive to do, because quite often you can do these things with an existing spend rather than, I said before, spending money on the same old. Try these new things, and I think you'll get great results.
So I want to ask you the final question about disability, because I know you cover mental health and what are the main disability issues for Pacific communities, and how do you see that being addressed in policy?
The continued lack of access. It's really difficult for Pacific people to negotiate the system, and the system is a really mean system where it's underfunded. So you get rationing agencies called NASCs. In Auckland, it's Taikoura. Lovely people. We work closely with them. But they're there to ration the government spend. And sadly, Pacific people get rationed harder than the mainstream of the population, who are familiar with the system and can engage with it. So I really want to see the access to disability services opened up for Pacific people, because they too often just don't get them, whereas everybody else does.
Thank you so much, Honourable Voi Mark Goshi, for coming to talk Pacific Health and Wellbeing with me today. We are almost out of time. Should you have any questions, please look up Wakatautua online. Their address is www.wakatautua.co.nz. Thank you so much, Voi.
Thank you very much. And look at our Facebook too.
Look up Wakatautua on Facebook as well. Thank you so much.
Together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.